You're listening to SBS News.
Brexit means Brexit.
Brexit is unumstossbar.
Rocket Man should have been handled a long time ago. He's fired!
Au nom du peuple français!
Wir schaffen das.
Make our planet great again.
Don't worry, be happy.
I will kill you if you destroy my country.
Better is always possible.
Let's do this!
I ain't spending any time on it.
Hello, I'm Brett Mason in the gallery for SBS World News. After 9 long weeks of campaigning in 5 electorates spread across 4 states, finally, it's Super Saturday. In a moment, we'll speak to SBS correspondents in all 5 of those seats with the very latest on the eve of Election Day. But first, here's political reporter Miles Morgan with his take on the week that was.
Thanks, Brett. And this week, the Northern Territory town of Tennant Creek welcomed a sitting Prime Minister for the first time since 1982 this week. But it wasn't a holiday for Malcolm Turnbull. He was there at the request of local leaders to see firsthand the town's high unemployment, crime and domestic violence levels. In February, a toddler was allegedly sexually assaulted there, casting a harsh national spotlight on the historic gold mining town.
It's a complex problem in that the end of the day, you've got parents and families who've not been doing the right thing by their kids, who have abused their children, who've neglected their children.
The Prime Minister spent the night in Tennant Creek and came up with several ideas to radically change the town. The government's actively discussing trialling its controversial cashless welfare card there. And Malcolm Turnbull says the whole Barkly region could join the government's cities deals policy. But he says it needs the support of the local Indigenous population. Just over half the town is Aboriginal.
This is your country, and our commitment is to work with you and with your support, your guidance, your wisdom to ensure that we get a regional deal that'll enable every wing of government and every agency cooperate.
Local elder Ronald Plummer told SBS the way to solve the disadvantage is to address Tennant Creek's most pressing problem, overcrowded housing.
Somewhere along the line, someone's got to be accountable, be responsible, you know. The housing issue needs to be addressed first, because you can't, you know, talk about jobs and talk about policing when you've got overcrowding. That needs to be solved first.
While the PM was in the Northern Territory, his front benches were downplaying privacy concerns over the government's My Health record. All Australians are getting a My Health record this year unless they go online to opt out of it. It's an online summary of your health information, including allergies, prescriptions and test results. There are concerns about who can access the data, and some medical professionals are urging people to opt out. The Health Minister Greg Hunt told Macquarie Radio it's an important scheme.
When people go from hospital or from GP clinic to GP clinic, or even within a GP clinic, you're seeing a new doctor for the first time, then it will help you and facilitate you, and you have total control. But it's everybody's choice.
Elsewhere, Labor found its by-election campaign overshadowed by a controversy involving one of its backbenchers. Western Sydney MP Emma Hassar has been accused of bullying her staff and forcing them to run personal errands, like picking up her dog's feces. She denies the allegation, but Labor is investigating the claims. Opposition leader Bill Shorten says his party must investigate before he can make a decision on her future.
Well, I don't know all the circumstances. That's what I'm saying to you. I wouldn't ask you or anyone else to pick up my dog's poo, but, you know, that's probably just what dog owners do. But I'm not walking the dog.
And that was The Week in Politics. Miles Morgan, SBS News.
Thanks very much, Miles. Well, after 8 long weeks of campaigning and more than $500 million in election pledging from both the Liberal and Labor parties, finally, it's Super Saturday. SBS has reporters in all 5 electorates spread across 4 states. Let's go first of all to our senior political reporter, Maria Zivic, who is in the Tasmanian seat of Braddon. Maria, where are you and what's the mood of voters there?
Well, Brett, I'm in the town of Burnie in Tassie's northwest. Look, mood of voters, certainly one of frustration, being sick of you know, they're sick of looking at course loot, sick of hearing the various policies, particularly from the major parties. In fact, we were just chatting to some of the voters this morning on the main street of Burnie, and, you know, half of them didn't even want to stop and have a chat. They're just so frustrated. They want this campaign over, and they will get that in a couple of days' time. A really interesting seat, this one, this Braddon seat in northwestern Tasmania. It has changed hands about five times in the past 20 years, a very tight margin of just over 2%. So there'll be, 72,000 voters who'll make up that, who'll decide really which way this seat goes on Saturday.
Let's talk through the politics. Who's the incumbent and who's her main rival?
So you might remember Labor's Justine Kay. She was one of those wrapped up in this dual citizenship saga that we heard so much about earlier this year. She was found to be a dual British citizen and hadn't basically renounced her British citizenship in time ahead of the 2016 election. So she's going up against, interestingly, the same man that she snatched the seat from in that 2016 election. That's Brett Whiteley, who's running for the Liberal Party. He was one of three Liberal MPs who were wiped out in 2016 in Tassie. So interesting that he's running again. And it's really tight here. I mean, all the polls are suggesting that we're, you know, some are saying 50-50, so really, really knife edge. No real sign of which way this by-election will go, and a really important one, as we know, for Labor to retain or to win back, really, and all of that again linked to the Labor leader's leadership, so Bill Shorten's leadership.
It's pretty extraordinary that voters are so disillusioned given the incredible amounts of money that have been pumped into what is a fairly small electorate, let's be honest. Labor committing around $183 million, the Libs a little less, $126 million. That's about $4,700 for every voter in that electorate, yet they don't seem to be warming to either candidate. Why is that, do you think?
Look, I think they, because it is a marginal seat and because it has changed hands so many times, it's been a real focus in elections gone by. The other thing we need to remember here is that voters here, so voted in a federal election 2 years ago, then they went back to vote in a state election just in March. Now they're voting in a by-election and they're going to have to vote again in a federal election in less than 12 months. So they're sick of going to the polls. They're also sick of hearing about these promises. So a lot, I think, in their minds, they feel like they've heard all the promises before. They've heard, Polly is talking about loads of cash coming their way, and they feel that it hasn't always eventuated. So I think that's where their frustration really lies.
Tasmania is famous for delivering political mavericks. We had Jackie Lambie herself booted out of the Senate for her dual citizenship. You've been speaking to some independents in this election too.
Yeah, that's right. There's one independent in particular who's getting a lot of attention. His name's Craig Garland. He's a local fisherman in this electorate. And look, he's quite interesting because he ran in the state campaign earlier this year, made the decision 2 weeks before the state election, and actually managed to get about almost 2,000 primary votes on, he had a budget of something like $780. So he really didn't put much money in, nor a lot of effort. Yeah, it really is quite outstanding. And so he's kind of getting a lot of attention now in this federal campaign because he's done the same thing, running again, but as obviously put in his paperwork a lot earlier this time, and he's also got a little bit more money behind him, but Brett, not a lot more. I think it's about $2,000 that he's borrowed off a friend. But yeah, he's getting a lot of attention because he's made it very clear that he'll be preferencing Labor and the Greens in this by-election. So that's kind of been a focus for the Liberal candidate because they're worried that, they don't want the independents' preferences going Labor's way and helping boost Justine Kay.
I was speaking with Jackie Lambie not that long ago, and she seems to think that there is a sense on the ground there that things are moving in Labor's favour. Do you get that sense, or do you think it's still just simply too close to call?
I think it's still too close to call, and I've spoken to voters who are in sort of the Labor camp and those who are in the Liberal camp as well, and it's interesting to see the issues that are coming up. I think Labor's real focus on health is a really massive issue here, you know, access to health services, a lot of people on disability pensions here requiring various health services. So that's really cutting through. And, you know, the Liberal Party's been pretty careful in this campaign not to let that get away from them. They've also been talking about health, but in a different way. So suggesting that, you know, because the economy is going well, because there's been a jobs boost in this part of the region, that all of that economic boost actually helps pay for those essential services. So they're both kind of cutting through on that front, I believe. There's also other voters who just really think, you know, jobs is the number one factor, and you know, unless the local MP can guarantee, you know, a jobs boost to this area that's needed it and had something like a 9% unemployment rate about 4 years ago, you know, unless they can promise that, that, you know, they're no good.
Maria Zivic joining us from Braddon in Tasmania. Thanks very much and enjoy Super Saturday.
Thanks for your time.
Now to Longman, where we find our Queensland correspondent, Stefan Armbruster. Steph, you've been out and about at the pre-polling stations. What's the mood like there in Queensland?
Well, the polling officers told me that they'd had a pretty good turnout every day. The one I went to, they were getting about 600 people through. They were saying that's much higher than during the federal election. But in if you ask around the streets, people generally aren't. They don't seem to be really engaged with the politics of it at all. It's almost like they're annoyed by this. They're fed up of listening to a lot of the rhetoric.
Sounds a lot like the mood Maria was describing down in Tasmania. Who are the candidates in Longman?
Well, there's Susan Lamb. She was the sitting Labor member. She snatched the seat at the last election from Wyatt Roy, who was the youngest ever parliamentarian in Australia. And it was one of the big scalps of the last election. He was Malcolm Turnbull's assistant minister for innovation. So that was a bit of a surprise that she got in. And she had a bit of a cloud hanging over her head once the citizenship issue arose. She hadn't ever really properly renounced her British citizenship. She gave a tearful speech in Parliament about it, but that wasn't enough for the High Court, who said that, well, that's not evidence, you just didn't renounce it. So this is where we are. The Liberal National Party candidate is Big Trev Ruthenberg. Now, he was born in what was then an Australian colony, but is today the country of Papua New Guinea, and he is definitely an Australian citizen. He was a former head of the Lutheran Church of Australia in a lay position. He's worked in the Scouts and the Cadets, and he's also a former parliamentarian, state parliamentarian for the area. And of course, something there's been a bit of focus on, he spent 7 years as a cadet in the Royal Australian Air Force. Then there's a sort of a cornucopia of other candidates standing in the seat. The Greens, they get about 5% of the vote. They're well below the national average. Gavin Behrens, he's a regular candidate for them in the area. There's Jim Salim. He's a rather interesting character going back to the 1980s. He was convicted back then and jailed over involvement in assault on an African National Congress spokesperson based in Australia at the time. He's still associated with some fairly interesting far-right groups. You have the DLP, the Liberal Democrats, the Science Party, the Country Party. There's no Family First this time, but there's a lot of focus on One Nation and their candidate, Matthew Stephen. He's a tradie. He's stood in the area before but hasn't had much luck, but has been the focus of some controversy lately as well.
Longman is one of the least racially diverse electorates in the country, Steph. How is One Nation being received this time around?
Well, it's really hard to tell. At the last election, there was a lot of talk the last state election, that One Nation could take up to 11 seats in the state, and they got one. Again, there's a lot of speculation about what the role of One Nation could be. The polls, as we know, are not always very accurate. In the last federal election, more than 20%, almost 25% of votes on first preference went to a non-major party. So, and the fallout from them was quite interesting. One Nation was held up as the party that put Susan Lamb into power because they preferenced Labor over the Liberal Nationals. But analysis then since has shown that One Nation voters, they don't really stick to the preferences, and it's really right across all those other parties that are standing, and the distribution of those preferences that will be really critical to who wins, because right at the moment, Susan Lamb and Trev Ruthenberg, they're really running neck and neck.
And some rather unsavoury Facebook posts have led to some rather awkward questions for Matthew Stephen.
Yeah, they're quite extraordinary. One of them is he says that he came runner-up in a beauty pageant called Miss Abbo, A-double-B-O. He says it's a competition that was run by an Indigenous group that called it the Australian Born and Bred Originals, and that he couldn't even really pin a date on it. But he said it was sometime between 2005 and 2007 when he would have been about 17 or 18 years old. And he was saying, look, it was all done in good taste. I've tried to track down this beauty pageant, and the local elders I've spoken to and other people say they'd never heard of it, and they'd also were saying that it's not really a word that Aboriginal people are seeking to reclaim, so they're quite sceptical about his claims about what it means, or if he just made a typo when he was tweeting, which in which case that would look really bad.
We actually asked him about that Facebook post yesterday. Let's take a listen to his response.
So yeah, sure, I participated in an Indigenous rugby tournament. After the tournament, the Indigenous players held a pageant, they judged the pageant, they awarded the pageant, they named the pageant the Australian Born and Bred Originals pageant. And I came second in that pageant. I think the biggest travesty is I didn't win the pageant because I looked stunning that night.
You don't feel as though that was disrespectful in any way?
How was an event run by Indigenous people, named by Indigenous people and awarded by Indigenous people disrespectful to those very Indigenous people?
So, Steph, you've been out speaking with people from all of those different political parties that you rattled off earlier. What's your prediction for Sunday morning in Longman? Too close to call?
It's really hard to call, Brett. I think it'd be a brave person who would call it. There's serious implications, obviously, for Bill Shorten. If Labor doesn't win this seat, it'd be the first time, or what it could be one of the seats that in the first time in 100 years an opposition hasn't won in a by-election. So that has some pretty big implications there. But it's really too tight to call. They're talking about counting going on for several days next week before we get a firm result.
On that point, Anthony Albanese has been campaigning in Longman more than once. Did people there talk about Albo as being a potentially better opposition leader, or is it not really a factor?
Well, yes. There's been some interesting coverage in the paper here in Queensland about that. There does seem to be a lot of talk about the Albanese factor in the media. People on the ground... it's hard to say. People on the ground, that's not really the factor for them. They're not looking at the big picture. They're looking at their day-to-day lives. And what they're seeing at the moment, by the sound of it, is that their lives aren't improving. And they'd like some sort of improvement in their daily living standard. And that's probably how they'll be voting, with their pockets.
Fantastic observation. Stefan Armbruster, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brett.
Well, let's now head to the Adelaide Hills and Kangaroo Island, where we find SBS South Australian correspondent Rhiannon Elston. Rhiannon, you're there in the seat of Mayo. There was so much hype, so much expectation when the Liberals endorsed Georgina Downer, the daughter of Australia's longest-serving Foreign Minister Alexander Downer, but that expectation hasn't really eventuated in the opinion polls.
No, the polls are showing Rebecca Sharkey in a comfortable lead at the moment. As you say, Georgina Downer was very much a blue ribbon candidate. She's from a political dynasty. Her father, Alexander Downer, held the seat of mayor for 24 years. So, you know, you would be forgiven for thinking that the Liberals thought they were in with a really strong chance of taking back this seat, which has got a really strong Liberal tradition, but such is not the case.
What do voters in Mayo like about Rebecca Sharkey? She's someone that we haven't heard too much about here in Canberra. She is, of course, formerly aligned with Nick Xenophon. What do voters there tell you they like about her, and why does she have such a big lead, do you think, in the opinion polls?
Yeah, she's got a reputation as a really hard worker, and I think that's the guts of it. She's been having forums in the electorate every night this week. She's out there handing out flyers. She's campaigning for grassroots issues, I think you could say, things like the local hospital and healthcare, mobile black spots. She's just done a lot of work really meeting people and getting a face out there. And I think the other thing as well that she's got over Georgina Downer is that she's lived there. You know, she's had that long-term connection. And while Georgina Downer was born in Mayo, she hasn't lived there for probably 20 years. She's most recently lived in Melbourne and actually tried to win a seat for the Liberal Party, tried for pre-selection for the Libs at the last federal election and didn't claim that one. So, you know, Rebecca Sharkey, she's done the FaceTime, I think you could say.
We've seen some pretty extraordinary interventions from very senior Liberals. We've seen former Prime Minister John Howard, of course, Georgina Downer's father's old boss when he was Foreign Minister. We've seen him down there for several campaign events. We saw Peter Dutton, the Home Affairs Minister, deliver a quite extraordinary press conference this week where he was effectively saying a vote for Rebecca Sharkey is a vote for Bill Shorten, is a vote for people smugglers. How have people responded to those national interventions in what is a really local campaign from the way you're describing it?
Yeah, well, they've had all the big guns out. We've had the Prime Minister and several very illustrious Liberal leaders, as you mentioned. Meanwhile, Rebecca Sharkey's had Andrew Wilkie. I think she had Bob Catter earlier on in the piece. It's not quite in the same basket. Really, what local voters seem to want is somebody that will do the hard yards for them on the ground. This is an electorate that stretches from the Adelaide Hills all the way down to Kangaroo Island. You've got some wealthy residents, but you've also got more moderate ones and a lot of small businesses, horticulturalists, and they're really interested in things like maintaining the roads, access to services, healthcare. And I think the difference is that that Rebecca's got the track record there, whereas Georgina is at this stage mostly just talk.
One of the really interesting things I've noticed about Mayo Rhiannon compared to some of the other seats is that voters there seem a lot more forgiving of Rebecca Sharkey. In other seats like Longman and Braddon, a lot of voters are quite angry that their MP didn't have their house in order and that this by-election has sort of been inflicted upon them. What have people there said to you about Rebecca Sharkey and Section 44 of the Constitution? Are they angry about having to go to the polls?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think it's fair to say there is a bit of election fatigue here. You know, we've just had a state election. We're staring down another federal election. But I haven't seen the anger so much that you're referring to. Like I said, Rebecca Sharkey really is very well liked. And I mean, all that I can say about that is that I think that's down to the fact that she's really involved in a lot of community aspects. And so I'm not really hearing the anger that you're referring to there, but certainly the voter fatigue.
Well, I'm not expecting too many surprises when I speak to you live from Mayo on election night. SBS South Australian correspondent Rhiannon Elston, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Brent.
Our WA correspondent Kyle Brown joins us now from Perth. Kyle, what are the big issues on the West Coast this by-election Super Saturday?
Well, it's been a very interesting turn of events over here in WA. The Liberal Party decided not to actually list any candidates in Perth or the Fremantle federal by-elections. They instead chose to put all their resources into winning the state seat of Darling Range, which they successfully won a few weeks back. This year, obviously, we've got a few people in each of these seats. There's actually a few less than you'd expect, especially in the seat of Fremantle, which has been what's been considered a Labor stronghold for quite some time. That seat's been held by the ALP going back to 1972, and they won the seat with a margin of 7.5% versus the Liberal Party last election. It's also an area with strong Green support and a bit of a bohemian vibe. In 2016, actually, the Greens won 17% of that primary vote. The electorate also includes Perth's Rottnest Island, a popular getaway, which doesn't have too many voters on it, but is an interesting area from at least a political perspective. It's ended up being into the by-election because Labor's Fremantle MP, Josh Wilson, is one of the four MPs who've been forced to resign from Parliament because of the renunciation of their British citizenship was not finalised by the time nominations closed in 2016. There's only seven candidates running. Labor's Josh Wilson, obviously the previous one, is facing that by-election because his renunciation of his British citizenship didn't actually get through in time for the closing of nominations. As Liberal aren't running, the nearest competition is actually coming for the Greens, and they've got Dorinda Cox, who's a Indigenous and human rights activist. She's a Noongar woman from WA Southwest and has a 20-year career in government agencies, including the WA Police Service.
And then we scoot across to Perth, where Tim Hammond resigned the seat rather unexpectedly, a rising star in the Labor Party. He resigned due to family reasons. His replacement is someone who's well known to us here in the press gallery in Canberra. But for those who aren't here in Canberra or there in WA, who's the Labor candidate in Perth?
Patrick Gorman, he's a WA raised and born gentleman. He's worked in senior roles for Kevin Rudd when Kevin Rudd was both Foreign Minister and Prime Minister. He's one of the few members of the party who stuck through almost most of Kevin Rudd's political changes during his time in office. In 2015, he was actually elected the State Secretary of the WA Labor Party, and a lot of credit has been given to him for the campaign that led to the WA's McGowan Labor government winning the election last year. His only real competition is from the Greens because, once again, Liberal aren't running for this seat, and that's Caroline Perks. She has a strong background in sustainability, as you'd expect from a Greens candidate. She actually travelled to Paris in the 2015 for the climate change agreement to campaign for the positive changes towards it, and has previously been a senior sustainability officer for the embattled city of Perth, which has had its fair share of issues recently. Liberal Party announced it wouldn't be nominating any candidates for Perth by-election, but there are a number of independents campaigning who have ties to the Liberal Party, such as Jim Graydon, whose father, I believe, was previously a candidate and member of the Liberal Party. It's an interesting seat to see change, but it's quite a diverse electorate. It stretches from the expensive inner-city dwellings all the way out to lower-density houses heading along the river to some really quite old areas with quite old and established housing.
And what do people actually say? We've seen your stories. You've been out and about at the pre-polling stations. What do people say about the decision by the Liberal Party not to run a candidate? Do they kind of just say, well, they were never going to win anyway and that's fair enough? Or do people sort of feel quite worked up about the fact that the Libs haven't bothered to at least field a candidate over there?
There does seem to be quite a bit of disappointment. I mean, Labor only held that seat with a margin of 3%. We have seen posters around the city with a silhouette of a face with a question mark on it asking, where is the Liberal candidate for Perth and Fremantle? It's been a bit disappointing for many of those people who are interested in it, considering how close that last election was. And while that seat has been held by Labor since 1983, that vote has been falling from Labor with a shift towards the Greens. While they still have it on a two-party preferred basis, with some of the issues that have happened in recent years, and especially the concerns around whether party members have the right to be in Parliament, this could have actually seen a shift in favour of Liberal Party if the right conditions were met.
Well, if Malcolm Turnbull breaks that 98-year drought and manages to win a seat from the opposition in a by-election, he may well regret the decision not to run candidates in those seats in WA. Kyle Brown, thank you very much for your observations.
No worries.
That is The Gallery for another week. Join us for special live coverage of Super Saturday. We'll be live to all of the correspondents you've just heard from. They'll be scattered right across the country, 6:30 p.m. on SBS World News. Have a great weekend.
SBS acknowledges the Ngunnawal people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which the Australian Parliament sits and where this program was recorded. We pay respect to the elders of the Ngunnawal nation, both past and present.
If you enjoyed this, you can find more SBS features on our website or from your favourite podcaster like iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher or Wooshka.